I just to explain it.
Go ahead, you can put that on. Paul is a missionary to Vietnam who doesn't live in Vietnam. He runs a different kind of mission agency where he travels back and forth four or five times a year, coordinates with the Vietnamese pastors, finds out what they need, and he comes back here, and then he speaks for them in the United States. And of course, in the last year and a half of COVID, Vietnam's been shut down. Now, we had two Vietnamese pastors visit us probably 10 years ago, maybe a little less than that, Pastor Phuc and Pastor Mon both came here. Pastor Phuc preached for us. I have been entertained by both those pastors in Vietnam. Both of them live fairly comfortable lives in Vietnam. They've done a good job, but under COVID, they let Paul know that finally the food has run out. The government comes up with trucks. People have to stand in line to get food out of the back of the trucks, and these men have taken everything they had and fed as many of their people as they could. They finally called out to Paul Scott and said, "We need help." Okay, I know both those men. Those men have fed me. Okay, those men have housed me. So, what Paul wanted to do was to get up with us and see, you know, if we could help. So, what I really worked out was for him to be at Anchor Baptist Church in Wellsville at 6 o'clock tonight. It was the most convenient time when our people could go over, the people at Anchor could work with that. Then what Paul has done, this is typical Paul Scott, he took his own money and he bought a number of cups that have Ty Phuc's church, all his people, you know, a group shot of his, on the cup. He paid $10 each for them to have them made, and he's going to sell them for $25 each and send the entire amount of money to those churches for help, for anybody that would buy one of those cups, okay? So, a couple things. At 1 o'clock, we'll have a brief business meeting to see if this church wants to vote $500 in mission fund for that automatically. I've had people already give me cash that want to send it over there. But again, Paul Scott has really dedicated his life to seeing to it those folks are taken care of. For those of you who lived through the time of the Vietnam War, I know people over there personally who went to concentration camps when the country fell. I know those people personally. Okay? I've sat at their table. I've eaten with them. They can tell you what it's like to have your country fall and to have troops go through and lock you up and re-educate you, and they lived through that. I know a woman who and a man, and I traveled with them for quite a distance at one point on a bus trip, and we went to a meeting together. And what had happened is they had just gotten married. The man had grown up in a Christian household, which is a fairly rare thing in Vietnam. The woman grew up in a typical Buddhist household. And when he left his house, his folks forgot his heritage, married this girl. They'd only been married about a week or so when the country fell. And he was somebody that he'd been a soldier. So, you know, he was one of those going to get arrested. So he had a lot of money and he handed it to his wife. And he said, "Look," he said, "I'm going to be arrested." And he said, "But if you'll pray to the name of Jesus, he'll help you." And she said, "What? You're a Christian? You know he's a Christian." And you know, she was upset with him. So sure enough, they came and arrested him. And he went off to a concentration camp. And the very first day, someone stole her wallet. And she had nothing. And she's wandered around. On the second day, a woman in the market called over. And she did. She called out to Jesus. She said, "Oh, Jesus, my husband said you would help me." The second day, a woman in a market called her over and said, "Is this you?" and showed her her ID card. She says, "Yes, that's me." "Then this money is yours." And she was stunned, the entire amount of money. And she said, "Yes, one of the prostitutes stole it from you, and her life, all these horrible things happened to her in the next 3 or 4 hours, and she decided the money was cursed and threw it at me and said, 'Find the owner.'" And so, you know, you know, it's just a wonderful story to hear those kind of things, you know. And again, what's happened in Vietnam in the last 10 years or so, and really 15 years, is slowly the government's trying to compete with China for wealth. They hate the Chinese. The Vietnamese hate them. There's statues all over the place of Vietnamese warriors that fought Chinese. they're jealous over their borders, and there's Chinese people in Vietnam, and they're treated like kind of like German Street Jews. You know, they're seen as shrewd businessmen and things of that sort, and they despise them. So they're opening back up. So in the few times I've been to Vietnam, you can't look anywhere without seeing cranes and buildings and things going up and ships from every nation in there. And, you know, and it's all there and such. But yet it's a communist government. When this disease hit, everything just shut down. No liberties, nothing whatsoever. Okay. So if you can help with that, help with that. All right. Let's go, if you would, to Genesis. We're going to go to Genesis chapter... Oh, we'll go to 31. I had been on this last week, our evening service, which we do at 6 o'clock. Actually, Genesis 33. You know me. I'll change my mind 30 times before it's over. Now, what has happened just before this is we've had the famous wrestling match with Jacob and the angel of God. And you say, well, who would wrestle with the angel of God? About everybody I've ever known wrestles with God, all right? Over one thing or another. And I'm not commending that any which way, but I've never known anybody who hasn't wrestled with God, and I've never met anybody God hasn't wrestled with. And we, on our website, on that One Soul at a Time, if you go under guest preachers and you go all the way down to the bottom, there's a message called Wrestling with or Jabbing with Jacob. And I listened to that message probably about 18, 19 years ago in Virginia Beach, Virginia. And there was a man that preached it, and it was a profound message because he talked about the Jacob wrestling with the angel of God. And finally, the angel of God asked him, what is your name? Well, if that's all you're wrestling me for, you know, what's all this about? So he tells him, Jacob. And then the preacher stopped and said, all right, Jacob, you finally told the truth. 20 years ago, what did you say your name was? You lied and said your name was Esau. How's the last 20 years been for you? Okay. How's the last 20 years been? All right. What's it like to be a fraudster? Okay. What's it like to be someone who gets by with conning people and be a fraudster and lying to get your way? All right. Didn't work real well for you. And so God wrestles with him, but then typical of God, he then touches him. He's his hamstring then from that point on, he limps on that. And then God gives him another name, Israel, Prince with God. And again, it's a picture of the two natures of the believer. Prince with God, and yet he's Jacob. You read the book of Isaiah. God will talk about Israel, my beloved, and then say, Jacob, thou worm. All right? And if you're anything like me or anything like Jacob, you're a little bit of both. All right? You have both those operating inside of you. And may God win the victory. All right? So going on, what ends up happening now, keep in mind, when Jacob went to Laban's house, okay, and he went there, his mother told him, tarry there till I send for you. And yet he's there 20 years and she never sent for him. She said, I'll send for you when your brother no longer is seeking to kill you. We know from this encounter that Esau got over it a long time ago. Why didn't Rebekah send for him? She's dead. She'll never see her son again. She wanted to go ahead. She had a great insight from God, and we looked at that last week. What was that insight? She'd been told about the two nations in her womb, okay? Again, my wife said something to me profound a couple weeks ago. She said, why did God tell Rebecca? Why didn't she tell Isaac? Because Rebecca asked, right? She asked, why is it so? Isaac never asked. You know, you see not because you ask not, okay? So she has an insight with God, and then when Esau vows that he's going to kill Jacob, it said he said it in his heart. He didn't say it out loud, he said it in his heart, but then it was told Rebekah what he was saying. Well, who's the only one that can read the heart, okay? The only one that can read the heart is God, okay? So God told Rebekah. God told her. So we have a woman who is not unfamiliar with speaking with God, but what she uses it with. She maneuvers her son and she gets in there, tries to get God's blessings her way. Okay? Maneuvering her way. And if you really want to mess your Christian life up, you start trying to run it yourself. Okay? You get in there and start maneuvering things and run it yourself or whatever else. You want to make a mess? It's a good way to make a mess. And she made a mess. She ends up sending her son down and she'll never see him again. Never again does she ever see that boy, all right? And then Isaac has to pine 20 years, in fact, a lot longer than 20 years, we're going to see without his son. But Esau and Jacob are ready to meet, and Jacob is afraid to meet Esau. Now let me say it another truth that you might understand. Jacob has the blessing. He has the promise. Esau does not. But if you were a casual observer and observing either one of them for the next 400 years, you'd think that Esau had the blessing. For the next 400 years, if you'd observe that. Why? Israel goes into captivity, they're slaves. Okay? What's Esau? He's got his own land. They're doing things fine. Okay? You'd have sworn that Esau had the blessing. Don't be surprised as a Christian with the blessings of God looking around and seeing others who have things far better than you. Okay? Don't let that ever dissuade you. Don't let that ever make you think you don't have the blessings of God on your life, okay? Jacob had the blessings of God on his life, and yet Esau, for the next 400 years, looks like he's ahead. The two of them are about to meet, and we'll just look at this real briefly as they're about to meet here in 33. And Jacob lifted up his eyes, verse 1, and looked, and behold, Esau came with him with 400 men, and he divided the children unto Leah and unto Rachel and unto the two handmaids. And he put the handmaids and their children foremost, and Leah and her children after, and Rachel and Joseph hindermost. Now this is one of the beauties to having a bunch of wives. Right? You know, they tell the story of the Jew with the Arab friend, and the wives always had to walk in single file behind him. The Jew would scold him and say, you know, that's terrible, you know, they're equal rights and all that. One day, you know, he looks and the wives are marching in front of the husband. He says, I see you finally liberated. What do you mean? He said, we got landmines. All right. But the thing is, this is what Jacob's doing. This is what Jacob's doing. Jacob's afraid Esau's going to kill people. And he's got four women with which he has been sleeping with and by which he has children. And he sticks the two concubines out there first. He sticks the wife he likes the least third. And the one he likes the most, he keeps here. Okay? This is why that we'll find where the scripture said Jacob loved Rachel but hated Leah. Okay? A man can't serve two masters. So all I can do is serve once. They're sitting there, all right? But poor Jacob coming out of the fields, I don't think the man ever got a good night's sleep. They're wrestling for him and trying to, you know, who are you going to sleep with tonight or whatever else, and fist fighting and all that kind of stuff. And read it. That's what it says, okay? That's what it says, okay? But regardless of all that, this is that classical definition of hate and love that isn't what we think of. When Jesus Christ said, you cannot be my disciple except you hate your father, your mother, your brother, your sister, okay? What's he saying? All right, I hate you now. You know, that isn't it. Hatred in the Bible is to put something second place, okay? Second place. Jesus needs to be first place. Your family needs to be second place. If you do that, your family will have a wonderful life. You get that mixed up, you'll make a mess. You'll regret it, you'll sorrow, you'll weep, and your family will suffer, okay? Trust God with your family. When it says that Jacob loved Rachel and hated Leah, he's not saying, oh, Leah, we should just go to hell and die. No, he put her first and gave her the preeminence and everything. What an awful thing. That's why, again, people talk about, oh, Christianity, it's mean to women. Oh, really? Go to lands that haven't had Christianity and see how they treat women. Right. Go to lands where there is no such thing. You know what? When the Apostle Paul said in 1 Corinthians 7, let every woman have her own husband. My wife let me know real quick, I'm her own. Grabs his ear, and I ain't sharing you with no one, all right? I got my own husband, all right? We ain't sharing this. What a liberty for women when that was said, okay? Never again would a woman have to stand there and watch a man pile up wives and different ones, and never gonna happen again, all right? Christian lands don't do that. You want to see liberated women, you go to Christian lands. You want to see women under bondage, you go to lands where they give lip service, all right? These communist lands, they give lip service. You know, you go there and look at women on the construction crews doing the heavy digging and the horrible labor and that kind of stuff, and that's called liberation. No such thing to it, okay? All right, so the thing is, he puts them foremost. And verse 3, and he passed over before them and bowed himself to the ground 7 times until he came near to his brother. And verse 4, and Esau ran to meet him and embraced him and fell on his neck and kissed him, and they wept. Haven't seen each other for 20 years. Let me tell you something again. One of the harshest things that can happen is families that quit talking to each other. Families that for one reason or another, something has gotten in the way. Okay? Now my Bible says, only by pride cometh contention. Only by pride. And you know what I've learned? If just one will drop their pride, it'll work. If just one will. Okay? You may have family members that you have to cut off for safety, personal reasons, emotional reasons, and you may have to do that for a while. There are people who can be toxic. I understand that. And when they are toxic, you have to protect yourself from those people. But you better do it with a lot of wisdom. You better do it with that idea that that path to your door is always open, and we can smooth this out at any given time, okay? I heard a preacher say one time, he said, you want to see people weep, get them together at funerals where they haven't seen each other in a long time. And he says, I've learned one thing, a lot of that weeping is guilt. Guilt. They haven't handled it right, okay? Guilt coming together, all right? It's a terrible thing when it happens. So they weep when they see each other. What ends up happening is Esau then, he meets each of the wives and all the children, and he meets the whole Brady Bunch here as they are, you know, they're all concocted and put together, and you know, it's a wonderful thing. And let's look at this here. Let's go to verse 9. Jacob brings Esau many gifts. And Esau said, I have enough, my brother. Keep that thou hast unto thyself. Verse 10, and Jacob said, nay, I pray thee, if now I have found grace in thy sight, then receive my present at my hand. For therefore I have seen thy face, as though I had seen the face of God, and thou wast pleased with me. You know, it takes a lot of grace to receive gifts sometimes. It's not always easy to do it, especially if you're somebody who's always been self-reliant and someone's given you gifts. But there are times when God will weaken you in life where that's all you can do, and you have to take a gift from somebody. And, you know, one of the things, it's not as much today, but in my early years in this church, we had a lot of people in here who really had fallen through all the social cracks one way or another, okay? And I had people in here who, if I showed them favor, thought that I owed that to them. Why? Because they grew up on welfare. They grew up with everything we can give to them. If they needed some, they went to a county office, filled out a form, and if the form was filled out right, they had to have it. It must be given to them. And they thought, well, come, give me this. All right? And I'm not against, people know that I've gone to great lengths to give to people in this church. They got to be broke real quick with that. Right? Real quick, they got to be broke with that. And I know, for example, in Tanya's testimony, she talks about how that for a year, I paid for a cell phone. Say, why'd you do that? Because cell phones were just coming out and texting became the cool thing. All right, cursed be the man that invented it. I do it all the time. Cursed be the man that invented it. But you know, texting became the big thing. And you know, an old woman were doing it, and there was no way Tanya could. My heart went for her. And I got her a phone and paid for it for a year. She put it in her testimony, and I had a woman had the nerve to come up to me. Well, you bought one for her, how come not me? That woman's not in church here today. All right? You know, it's just, people are amazing. But it takes grace sometimes to receive, to be able to take things. And for Esau, a little tough to do, but he takes it. Jacob gives it to him. And It goes on and it says this, verse 12, Esau says, and he said, let us take our journey and let us go, and I will go before thee. Verse 13, and he said unto him, this is Jacob speaking back, my Lord knoweth that the children are tender, and the flocks and the herd with young are with me. And if men should overdrive them one day, all the flock will die. Now, this is one of the worst mistakes in Jacob's life. And he's made some mistakes. Okay? Why are we saying it's a mistake? Because number one, he's been waiting for 20 years for his mother to call for him. Mama never called. She's dead. Instead, God tells him, go back to your father. Okay? His father, 20 years, hadn't seen his son. Okay? 20 years, no word from him. 20 years. Those of you with children can imagine what that'd be like. Okay? 20 years he's gone. Go back to your father. Esau is saying, come on, I'll lead the way. Let's go back to dad. What's Jacob say? The children, I can't push them. Okay? The herds are too tender. He used his children as an excuse to not do what God wanted him to do. If you hate your children, you do that. If you hate your family, you go ahead and do that. You put them before God. Make them an excuse why you're not going to do what God wants you to do. The next years are not pretty for Jacob. They're terrible years. Some years ago, I had a man of God tell me he thought he ought to move to Black Creek and be part of this ministry. And I asked him a year later, I said, I thought you were going to move here. And he said, well, I decided to let my daughter graduate from high school. I thought, we'll keep her where she is. It's not pretty what happened to that daughter. It's not pretty. God was trying to get him out of there because of what was going on. Okay? God was trying to get him out of there. He used his daughter as an excuse. You know what Moses said in Deuteronomy when he's talking to him? Deuteronomy chapter 1, he's talking to Israel, and here they all are, and there are tens of thousands, and all of the accumulated, and they're all there, and they're listening to him. He said, look around. The only people still alive are those who were 20 and under when they sinned. Joshua and Caleb, all the rest are dead. You know what he says? He said, your little ones, which you thought should be for a prey, they're the only ones here. The parents use the little ones and say, oh, they're too young. We can't do this. What are you making us do? You're not protecting our children. You're not taking care of our children. Okay? Children are the only ones to go in. The parents all die. Don't you ever, ever, ever hold your children in between you and God. Don't you ever. I got trained in the Gethsemane Anabaptist Church in Lexington, South Carolina. And at one time, we were a great church. Never had over 60 people, started 11 churches around the world. Okay? I've told you to this day, Avi Gold, a Jew in Israel, travels around the United States and likes to visit churches where pastors were trained by Bill Randall. And at one point, the Lord showed me, none of the adults here will carry this church. Today, it's the children of those adults that have taken that church to the next level. The children of those adults. Most of those adults were destroyed one way or another. And I heard them talk about not doing that to my kids, not doing that here. Oh, no, I'm not doing that, okay? Let me tell you something. Your children belong to God. You better have some sense in how you walk with God and where you put your children, okay? I've watched consistently the people who consistently put family above church, family above this kind of thing, that kind of thing. It's never pretty what goes on, okay? You don't want to do that. I told the story before. My wife and I were privy to a book that was privately published in Norfolk, Virginia. A missionary couple that had lived in China from the late 1800s up even through World War II, and finally were expelled by the communists when they took over. That couple were old. They came to Norfolk, Virginia to die. And somebody had the wisdom to sit down and take their story down. And it's a wonderful story. And again, privately published. I wouldn't even know how to get a copy of it anymore. Okay, but in that, they talked about having some friends of theirs who they would go to see who are also Americans who are in China. And they get to see him every so often. And they went there one time, and there was a mantelpiece and a picture of two pretty blonde girls on that mantelpiece. And they said, "Who are these girls?" "Those are our daughters." "Where are they?" "Oh, we put them before God. We were called to come to China. We told the Lord, well, when those girls are gone, we'll go." They were both gone in a year. They said, "If we'd obeyed God, those girls would be here with us, blessing our lives." That's a hard story. I've had people furious with me for telling that story. But I just read one out of the Bible where a man just about destroys his family because God told him, "Go to your father." And he put his children and the flocks and the tenderness first. And it's not going to be pretty what happens to them. Okay? It's not going to be pretty when they tarry in Shechem too long. It's not going to be pretty at all. Okay? They end up buying land in Shechem. Okay, doesn't sound like, you know, in other words, Jacob, you made an excuse to your brother. Said the children are tender. Didn't seem tender when you were running away from Laban. Okay. But now he doesn't want to go see his dad. Why? His mom's dead. Okay. It's a fractured thing. You know what? These are human beings here. Right. Sometimes we forget that these are human beings, right, living lives, okay, who have the God of Abraham, Isaac, and of Jacob. And by the grace of God, through Jesus Christ, we have that God. Okay? And it's the God we live with. It's the God we serve. And you need to know how he thinks and how he operates. Okay? And also to understand the fallibility of human beings. Men fail God consistently. Even great men of God fail God. Okay? And you will fail God. I don't want you to fail God. Part of my job as a pastor is to see to it that you don't fail God, but you will fail God, sometimes in ways that only you know. It's the privacy of your own home and you failed God. You know it. There's no point in even telling anyone else. You failed God. Sometimes there'll be a public spectacle. You failed God. But you know what? That's what grace is all about. Get up again, all right? Get up again. Go with that God. Understand he's a gracious God. Mercy rejoices against judgment, okay? God would rather give mercy than judgment. Far rather do it. So when you fail God, just get up again. Go on again. But he ends up buying land. Now again, if you're just resting the troops, you don't buy land and plan. Okay? Look at chapter 34. "And Dinah, the daughter of Leah, which she bare unto Jacob, went out to see the daughters of the land. And when Shechem, the son of Hamor, the Hivite, prince of the country, saw her, he took her and lay with her and defiled her." So what's one of the first things that happens? All right? She goes out there. She's mingling with the people of the land. She's no longer keeping herself as Israel, somebody that ought to be separated unto God. She's gone out there and laid with this guy without marriage. Okay? And what a grief. All right? I realize we live in a day and age now where everyone accepts that. Okay? I've got a brother who, I just love what his attitude was with, "All right, they're doing it, but I don't like it. I've had my children show up, all right? They're living together," and I told them at the door, I said, "Look, I'm going to tell you right now, I don't like this, okay? I think it's going to hurt you, but I've never kicked anyone else out of my house for doing it, and I'm not going to kick you out, and I'm not going to bring it up anymore. It's done. It's over, all right? You've done it. It's settled, okay?" But the point is, she goes out there with this fella, and it's against the commandments of God, who was very careful who they married. Okay? You know, it's important who your children marry. It's important. Where do they marry? If they marry someone with character. Okay? I've been very fortunate in that. I've had sons who wandered outside this church and still married people with character and good character. And I love that. Okay? It's been a good thing. And I've been happy when they brought them back into the house of God and brought them here, and a delight to me that happened. But it was a grace. It was a grace, okay? Tremendous grace that they went out there and found someone of character, okay? You know, Chelsea, I think of you and Nate, you know, out there, and yet you found a man of character, okay? What a blessing from God, okay? Nate, you found a woman of character. What a blessing from God, okay? You know, when you're out there, neither one of you looking for anything like that, and yet God gave you somebody like that. What a gracious thing that God should do that, okay? Gracious thing. My wife and I didn't find people of character, and we didn't. We found each other, and then we found a great God. who taught us character, okay? Found a great God. Pretty thankful to him. He's been very gracious to us. So she goes out there. Now, here's what the problem is. And I think most people know this story, but when this happens, the man wants to do the honorable things. He sends Dad to go talk to the family and says, hey, you know, give us the daughter and, you know, we'll do whatever we need to do. So what happens is Jacob's sons lie to them. And they say, well, you're all right, you get yourself circumcised and we'll trade with you, you'll be like us, okay? And so what happens when they get circumcised, on about the third day, they're too sore to move. Okay? The Muslims to this day circumcise the children at 13. It's a pretty sore and hurtful thing when it goes on. And so the thing is, I mean, well, think of Moses and his son. All right, what's it like? Mama runs over and takes a sharp rock and circumcises the boy in front of him, all right? And, you know, it's hard. It's a hard thing. And but the thing is, it's weakened them all. And they're all laying there. And then the sons of Jacob just go in and wipe them all out. Genocide. Just wipe every one of them out. Okay? And it's only a couple of them that do it. And they just go in there and wipe them out. And Jacob says, you have caused me to stink before the people of the land. You've caused me to do this. What an awful thing that you've done. And it says, God put the fear of Israel upon the people so that they could escape from there. Jacob, you're reaping what you sowed. God told you to leave. God told you to go be with your dad. Now you got two sons who are criminals. You got two sons that are vile. You got two sons, all right, that grieve you to no end, okay? Don't ever doubt that God has a payday, but it's not always on Friday, okay? You know, it's interesting also, because think how long Isaac pined. 20 years, and then we don't know how long Jacob was in Shechem, okay? All that time, Isaac was longing for his son. You know what God made Jacob go through? He took Joseph away. He reaped what he sowed. He reaped what he sowed. The most beloved son that he had ends up going as a servant to Egypt. He doesn't see him for all those years. He reaped what he sowed. These are hard things. Hard, hard things. Let me tell you something. I've said it many times before. If you write a bad check today and you get saved tomorrow, it'll still bounce. But you'll handle it different than you ever did before. Okay? You'll handle it with some character. You'll handle it the way it's supposed to be handled. Okay? I bounced a check on a businessman here probably about 4 or 5 years ago. It was just one of those things. I'd given him a check, told him fill it out when the car's done. Hundreds more than what I thought it was going to be. All right? And, you know, and I realized I bounced that thing and I came back here and got every bit of money I could and put it together and went to his office and said, you need to call your bank right now and find out how much that bank is going to charge you. He found out how much and I went down there and covered, you know, and put it in there so that he wasn't going to lose money when my check came back to him. All right? And put the whole thing in there. You handle it with some character. Was I ashamed when it? Sure, I was ashamed when it happened, okay? It's one of those things you wish with all your heart it hadn't happened. But when those things handle it, handle it like a Christian. Handle it the way you're supposed to handle it. See to it that nobody gets hurt by your stupidity, okay? And the man loved me for that. Then when it did come back and he was all covered, hey, what are we going to do with this? I said, well, sue me. We had a good time. All right. All that goes on here is they end up having to sneak out of town because Jacob's sons have become murderers, and not only murderers, they're torturers. Okay? They're grievous men. They're awful men in what they've done. Go with me to Genesis 35. Genesis 35, and go to verse 8. Jacob's on the way now. He's going to see his dad. He's going far too late. He's tarried too long. But he's finally going to go see dad. And then it says in verse 8, and Deborah, Rebekah's nurse, died. I thought Rachel was the wife. I thought Rebekah was the mama. What are they doing with Deborah, Rebekah's nurse? Well, there's good proof that Rebekah's dead. If you remember when Esau met, he said, I can give you people. Okay? Where did Deborah grow up?
She grew up in Laban's household. She grew up where Laban grew up. She grew up there. That's where she grew up. The language, the songs that children sing, all those kind of things. This is what she knew. Finally, the woman she's taking care of is dead, so when Esau comes, what happier place could she ever go than to a household that's been raised in Laban's household, where they all know the same nursery songs and the languages, and they know all that stuff, and she's there with them. But if you want proof that Rebecca's dead, there's the proof. Her nurse is with Jacob, and she dies. It's a sorrowful time. You know, I had a good friend of mine. We hung out on the streets together for quite a long time, and I've told you the story. Both of his parents were concentration camp victims. And I got to know his parents, and his mother was in a German concentration camp, his father in a Russian concentration camp. But they were both from the same little area of Czechoslovakia, though they never knew each other there. And if you know anything of the story of World War II, before France got involved in the war, when Germany had just taken over the Sudetenland in Czechoslovakia, one of the great appeasements that Chamberlain made to him, Irene Berkovitz's family was taken to a concentration camp, and she was one of them. She had the tattoo. But the French, a French agency, purchased children from the Germans, and she was one of those that was purchased. In other words, she's on a train, getting ready to go be gassed to death, and a French agency intervened, and you'll find that in history, a French agency, because they haven't been attacked by Germany yet, intervened, and she was saying she spent the war years in Palestine, shrapnel wounds all over the place from the wars in Palestine and things going on. Isaac Berkovich had been a wealthy butcher, very wealthy man where he was, and he began to fight for the free Czechoslovakians, the White Army. So if they're caught by the Germans, they're dead, but if they're caught by the Russians, they're dead. They're fighting to stay alive in between the lines. And eventually, he was captured by the Russians. And he was put in a concentration camp. And he tells the story of one day, his best friend from childhood raising his hand and narking on him for one piece of bread. That's how low they were brought in that concentration. His best friend from childhood was so starved, he raised his hand and narked on it. The Russians had a locker, like a high school locker, in the middle of a field, and they put Isaac in it and locked it and said, "You'll stay there till you're dead." It usually takes about 30 days. Okay? And that day, and again, we'll read history, a British train came into the concentration camp. And a British major paid cash to the Russians for the Czechoslovakian freedom fighters that day. And Isaac was let out, sat on a train, thinking he was about to starve to death, and he's being fed by the British. At the next train stop, all the Czechoslovakians pointed out the traitor to the British major, who put him out on the next stop, made him stay in Russia. And Isaac said if he could have held out for about 12 more hours, he'd have made it out with us. Isaac said, "All I believe in now is the shirt on my back. I don't believe in anything else." But when they got to New York, here's a man who's lost all family, lost everything he has. He'll never go back there again. And here's a woman refugee. She's lost everything they have. And I just want you to imagine growing up in Black Creek, and someone grew up in Belfast and you've never met. And now you're on the other side of the world and everybody you know is dead and destroyed. And you meet. And you both know all these same things, the festivals and the feast days and the language of the two married, okay? And they came together. That's Isaac's parents. And not Isaac's, I mean my friend Arnold's parents. But Arnold would ask them, "Mom, did you love him?" She said, "I didn't love him when I married him." "Well, why did you marry him?" You'd have to be blind not to understand why those two people were married. And you'd have to be blind not to understand that. But this is what family is. These ties, these draws, and sometimes people can lose everything. But you know what the Bible says? It says, "God taketh the solitary and set them in families." What a grace from God. What a wonderful thing that God does. He takes the lonely and gives them families and gives them people and gives them things that they can have. And he's a gracious God who does good. Deborah dies.
and Rachel dies. And when Rachel's dying, and by the way, who condemned Rachel to death? Her own husband did. Her own husband said, whosoever that teraphim is found with, let him not live. He didn't know it was his own wife. You better be real careful who you cuss and who you talk about, okay? You better be real careful about the things you say. You better be careful about the things you judge. Because Isaac, or Jacob himself, is the one who condemned her to death. She's hiding that teraphim. We don't have it. Yeah, if we find somebody, let them die, okay? God let her die, okay? I mean, these are grievous things that happen to families and that can go on, all right? Watch your mouth and what you say. Watch what you do and what God tells you to do, okay? Do what God tells you to do, and don't ever put your family, don't ever put your children ahead of God, okay? God has a way of making you wish you had never done that, okay? Never. You know what my family learned when we moved back to New York? You can schedule all the family picnics you want at church time. We're not going to be there. I don't care if great aunt so-and-so that hasn't seen me in 122 years is there. I'm not going to be there. And you know what? After about 3 years of hurt feelings, they don't schedule there anymore. They schedule them around and realize what our schedule is, okay? They don't do that anymore. Why? Because I don't hate them so bad that I'm going to put them before God.
Good.
I don't hate them so bad that I'm going to put them before God, all right? Can't imagine taking somebody in my family and putting them before God. I'm going to be in the house of God, all right? Forsake not the assembling of yourselves together, all right? I'm not gonna do that. Verse 8, Deborah dies. Verse 9, and God appeared unto Jacob again when he came out of Padanaram and blessed him. And God said unto him, thy name is Jacob. Thy name shall not be called anymore Jacob, but Israel shall be thy name. And he called his name Israel. And God said unto him, I am God Almighty. Be fruitful, multiply, a nation and a company of nations shall be of thee, and kings shall come out of thy loins. And the land which I gave to Abraham, Isaac, and to thee will I give it, to thy seed after thee will I give the land. And God went up from him in the place where he talked with him. And Jacob set up a pillar in the place where he talked with him, even a pillar of stone. And he poured a drink offering thereon, and he poured oil thereon. And Jacob called the name of the place where God spake unto him, Bethel. What's that mean? The house of God, okay? There's a point with God and Jacob. God tells him, Jacob, get back to Bethel. I'll never forget a great sermon I heard one time by a man of God. He said, what is Bethel to you? You know what it was to Jacob? It's where he met God. It's where he first talked to him. It's where he first saw him. And now he's made a mess out of everything he's touched. It's all wrong. He's destroyed everything that God gave him. And God said, go back to Bethel, find where it is. Where is it that you and God met? Where is it that you were the closest to God you ever were? Sometimes you need to find that spot again, okay? You need to find it. Sometimes it's not a physical spot. It's a place where you've been, all right? Spiritually, get back there. Find where he is. Get back with this God and find that, okay? God will deal with you again. God's a gracious God. Go to Psalm 63, if you would. Verse 1, O God, thou art my God, early will I seek thee. My soul thirsteth for thee, my flesh longeth for thee in a dry and thirsty land where no water is. To see thy power and thy glory, so as I have seen thee in the sanctuary. And that's what Jacob did. He took that pillar and anointed it, called it the house of God. He met God there, okay? Let me tell you something. There's a crisis in this land over the hearing of the word of God. I've heard of two preachers today, whose lives have fallen apart. Churches that have been abandoned. People get a hold of me all the time. We have a miracle going on here, just a miracle, okay? Yeah. If you don't think this is a miracle going on here, try to visit. See if you can find a church where they still got the King James Bible being preached, singing the old song. See if you can find a thing like this.
Right.
You got Dennis Schaefer back there, his grandpa. Put this floor down, all right? Hammered every single one of those boards there and put them in place, all right? His grandpa did that. How do I know? Because old Dick Botens helped him, and he said his father-in-law chewed him out every moment. Don't you hurt that floor. Don't you worry that floor. Don't you do anything wrong to it. And they put all that together, all right? But how many old churches like this, okay?
okay, are just a mess today.
Right.
Okay? Just a mess, and there's nothing going on, and God has been so gracious to us. And what we really need is for God to raise up a clergy, people who care, people who go out there and take these churches and love these people and teach the Word of God, where people can come in and learn the Word of God and have it, and so that people can come into the sanctuary of God and see God. Neil, would you close this?
Thank you.